from the time that they pronounced me dead was a good 45 minutes.
They cut my clothes and then they paddled my heart because my heart had stopped. And I could see people screaming and crying, but I didn't realize that was actually my physical body because I was somewhere else.
The only thing that I could feel, if you can imagine, absolute love and peace. There wasn't anything else to be felt.
I was greeted by people I had known in the past.
I'm back home again.
Incredibly safe and felt at home.
Welcome, welcome to Round Trip Death, everybody, and a hearty welcome to our special guest from Lloyd, Florida. And our guest today is Michelle Ledbetter. Good morning, Michelle. How are you?
Good morning. It's so nice to be here with you. Thank you for the invitation.
Thank you. I just want to give people a little idea up front. This is going to be so cool because we're going to be talking about your near-death experience and the fact that you are a hospice nurse, and there are really cool stories that can come from that, that are faith-promoting and messages of hope. We haven't had a hospice nurse on for a while. Geez, Michelle, this is the first time we've talked, and I feel like we're old friends already.
I do too. That's nice.
Hey, before we jump in, tell us a little bit about you. Who's Michelle?
Okay. I'm a registered nurse. I am certified in hospice and palliative care, and I have been a hospice nurse for a little over 20 years now. My career in nursing has been 30 years, but my heart and soul and connection is with hospice. I am a mother of two beautiful daughters and a grandmother of four grandchildren and two bonus grandchildren. I had a near-death experience myself that completely changed my view of life and the way I see it. And I hope that my message resonates with those who are ready to hear it. I'm not here to change anybody's mind. I'm just here to share my story. Hopefully, if you can see something that is a flicker for you, I'm here to support you through that too. So yeah.
Perfect intro. And for anyone who may be new to the show, I love how you put that because we're not trying to change anybody's mind. We stay very non-denominational. We're not trying to push any agenda. We just want to hear people's stories. And they always tend to bring us some hope. And that's what we're trying to spread in the world out there. And by the way, aren't daughters the best?
Yes, they really are. But they can be a challenge too. Now, these grandbabies, let me tell you, they're something else.
Well, they're better than the best.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right, let's jump into it. How long ago was it that you were in the bad car accident that led to your NDE?
Yes, so my accident actually occurred on February 13th, 2019. And my altered reality near-death experience happened the morning of Valentine's Day, where when I was in surgery, and then it kind of went through a five-day period where I don't really know exactly where it happened, but somewhere in that period.
Tell me about the accident. What happened and how badly were you hurt?
Sure. I was traveling as a hospice nurse, and I had finished one assignment, and I was on my way to a new assignment from Montana to Texas, and there was a storm, snowstorm that was coming. I'm a Florida girl.
That's a long drive.
A long drive.
Holy cow.
And so, yeah, super long. And, you know, part of it was probably the fatigue because I was in, you know, moving into the Colorado area when I had the accident. So the snow was just blowing sideways. And I was of the mindset, just keep going. And we were probably, it was around 7 o'clock at night and I'd started around 7 in the morning. I was following some truck lights in front of me because the wind, I couldn't see the road. So I was following those truck lights and he went up over a pass and I missed the pass. And so I don't remember anything. I came down off the embankment, and when my car came down, I had an L1 burst fracture, broken spine, and a traumatic closed head injury. My first memory was waking, and I had a profound sense of peace where you would otherwise think I would have been just a crazy hot mess. And it was to the paramedics, and they were attempting to get me from the car, but I just felt so peaceful. There was no fear there. And I was traveling with my little dog. They took us to the first hospital, these two paramedics that were just angelic. I could almost see them as angels because I felt so peaceful and so held. They were wonderful. They took me to the first place that we did imaging, and they realized that they needed to do urgent surgery. And so at that point, there was a nurse there that they had let my little dog stay with me on my lap the whole time. And I was able to engage, but I was kind of in and out. And so the nurse that was with me before, where they were getting ready to transfer me to a trauma unit, they were talking about impounding my little dog. And she knows me from no one. And I almost like I saw the godliness for the first time in someone. And she said, "Honey, I got you. I'm going to take your little dog home. And for as long as it takes for you to recuperate, I got you." It's like, what? Wow. Okay. And so I was just feeling loved. I was feeling embraced and peacefully held. The neurosurgeon came in and said, "We're going to have to transfer you to the trauma unit. We don't have time to mess around." And he told me some astronomical amount of surgeries he's done. And I say 10, I'm not real sure. Again, my brain was really kind of a mess. But and that's when the first fear, well, actually the second fear, the first fear came up when they said they were going to impound my little dog. And then the second fear came up when he told me he had done all these surgeries. And then he was going to go in my spine. And it was like, it was, a new day, brand new day. And I was a little nervous then. But I still felt a sense of peace. And so I don't remember going into the OR. I don't remember being put to sleep or anything like that. What happened next was the experience that came. So the way it presented was in a warehouse type setting, for lack of a better word. It was a very dark, cold, damp atmosphere. And the beginning of it was I felt the presence of my children behind me, and I was wanting to pull them into this warehouse that I was in. I didn't know what I was doing, but I turned to look at them to invite me. Now, I'm not speaking to them, but it's like you can hear their thoughts or whatever. And what I heard from their thoughts was, as they were looking at me, "Mom, you've really screwed this up, and we're not really interested in going with you." And so this fear started to rise in me, and this abandonment started to rise, and they turned away. They walked out this heavy door that had a window in it. And so I ran up to the door, and as I'm watching them walk away, they're going off into this land that just looks like it had been cleared by heavy equipment. It was very barren, but there's no color in this. So it's not like I could see any color. It was almost like a gray, black, white. There was no color. And then I turned and I started to see my life review. But when I try to describe it, it's not linear in time, all that I'm about ready to share with you. It's all like it's happening at once, but there still is like time is elusive in this whole realm. And so it starts with a lot of my childhood traumatic experiences that I encountered. It was like I was right back in them. And the emotions that I was feeling were so overwhelming. I was afraid, I was confused, abandonment, fear, guilt, all these emotions are just compounded. And I can't understand what's happening. And then my films kind of go away. And I see a patient that I worked with years ago who was HIV positive. And he was laying in a bed with his arms up over head. It was just the torture that I could see. It wasn't very pleasant. And I won't go into the details, but my first thing was the sadness and the compassion. And then I've got to find his partner. And so I'm in this state of thinking, like, what is happening and how can I find his partner to help him feel better? And then all of a sudden, a second strip of film starts to come. It's a little boy. Well, first it was a little girl, and I didn't know who she was at the time, but I start to see her childhood. And if you had to put a hierarchy on it, her abuse was worse than mine. And I'm not only living in my, what I think now, I'm starting to think I'm in hell. I'm not only living in my fear and my issues of abandonment and all those things that are roaring to the surface. I am now in her spirit body, seeing her trauma, living that with her. Sometimes I get a little teary, so hold on. The next one was a little boy. And essentially the same thing. Going through this traumatic, people are bullying him. It's just a very fearful, scared, horrible place. I am so afraid. I have no idea what's happening. And I start to feel a warm sensation at my feet. And it starts to move up my body. And in my altered state of reality. I am so fear-based that I feel like I'm forced to look up and I see a light coming through like cracks on the ceiling. Because I was in such a state of fear, as it started to come in, it actually poured in. And it was just this brilliant white light that did have like an orange, golden, yellow hue to it. But it's not a color I've ever seen in real life. When I saw it, my mind went to, I'm in hell and I'm getting ready to be burned and seared by this lava. So I bent over, I said probably some profanity in fear and just said, please make this quick. The next thing I remember, I realize I'm laying in a hospital bed, but this stuff is still with me. Like I'm still in the warehouse, but I'm also in the bed. And I look over in the corner and I see an African-American lady sitting there. And I was like, why are you here? And she said, I'm here to help you. I'm here to help you keep you safe. And all of a sudden she blended into my Caucasian sister. So I'm like, what in the world is happening? And as I see her, I think, oh, she's family. And I was like, you have to help me, like help me, because I'm wanting to get out of here. And I'm thinking she's my family. And it's like, we got to get going. Well, apparently what was happening during my whole time of not being in this reality, I was acting out what was happening in my hell reality. I was trying to get out of the bed. I just had surgery, 2 bars. I was cemented together. I had had the traumatic brain injury. I was getting out of the bed. And so they had to have physical people there to keep me safe.
Hey, quick break here with a special message for our Utah and Idaho listeners. Are you ready for the event of the summer? It's coming. It's the Riddler Road Rally Wasatch Tour, and it's hitting 11 cities this summer. They're giving away, are you ready for this? $110,000. That's $10,000 per city. It's a live citywide scavenger hunt on wheels where teams race in real time to solve clues, navigate GPS track locations, and claim victory. Rally your crew or ride solo. Don't miss out on the most fun you'll have this summer. Check the tour schedule to find out what cities are on the tour and register your team ASAP to get the early bird discount by going to riddlerroadrally.com/events. Hey, no worries if you didn't remember it. It'll be in the show notes. Now, back to the guest.
And so I slowly started to, like, I lingered back and forth between this for a minute. And then slowly, again, I don't know time, maybe days, maybe an hour. I don't know time. I started to come back to this reality more. And I realized I just went to hell. And I am not telling a soul. It was so awful. I can't even look at that. I slowly started to recover. They promoted me. I woke up one day and there's this big eyeball in the corner. And I thought, oh boy, here we go again. But it was actually a camera. So they had advanced the people to, the camera. And then I got better and I went home and I was a hot mess. I had no job because it was a new assignment. I hadn't gotten insurance yet. I had, my best friend was dying of cancer and I had $8 in my bank account and I went to old behavior. I was not good at feeling emotion, not at all. And so I went to drinking and I got addicted to the pain medication and I did this hoopla hot mess stuff for 2 years.
Hey, I just wanted to take a little breath right here.
Actually, I need it.
And I want to ask you some questions about this before we move on. I hope you don't mind.
Absolutely.
First of all, I've interviewed hundreds of people that have had NDEs, and they're all new every time. I keep getting surprised. Oh, I've heard it all. Nope, I haven't heard it all. Yours is very unusual.
Really?
Yeah.
I had no idea that this whole NDE group was going on. I had no idea what was that this whole thing until October. And I didn't speak about it very much because I was still processing. I mean, I had come so far, like the last 4 years have been just magical and a miracle and the things that I've received from life, God, whatever you want to call that, in prayer and meditation. Yeah. I've heard when I got introduced to it, I've been actually invited to be a presenter at the IANDS.
Yeah. IANS
conference, in August. because there's only 2% of people that have these hellish experiences.
Yeah, it's somewhere between 2 and 5%.
Is it? Oh, okay. I didn't, like I said, I'm learning as I go. I don't, and you know, there's probably more, but we're afraid to talk about it.
Well, exactly. But yeah, these hellish, or you just call them disturbing experiences.
Disturbing, I like that better.
They are a small percent, but they do happen. We've had other people on the show that have had them. A couple of things that I wanted to ask you before we get into more detail. Okay, first thing that I was curious about is, did you have any recollection of leaving your body? Because you said you ended up in this big place, but was there any process of getting there, or were you just there all of a sudden?
I did not have a leave my body. It was like a, hold on, because I've never been asked this question. And I've, you know, sometimes I haven't thought everything. It was more like a containment within. I was present in my physical body. I was present in my emotional body, felt like me. I'm working this through with you. The people that I was in their body, I was in their body. I was in their spirit body, feeling their emotions. So is that considered leaving your body? But I was still in mine too. It was, I don't even know how to explain that, to be honest, Eric. It wasn't like, I've heard some people say they float up in the room and they see themselves. I didn't have that.
Yeah, okay. And that's okay. It doesn't make it any less real. Now, it is a very normal thing in these disturbing experiences to experience a few different scenes that are each hellish kind of scenes. I've heard everything from literally like a devil standing over me, making me do things, to horrible abuse, to all kinds of other things. Maybe you can feel good knowing yours wasn't as bad as some other people's are.
Yeah, right. Mine was very connected to me. Mine was very connected to me.
Yeah, and that doesn't mean that it wasn't profound and it wasn't serious. It
changed me from night and day. People don't even recognize me anymore.
Yeah. Was there ever a time that your feelings changed from that fear and abandonment to something positive?
Absolutely. Yeah. It was when I was at my very rock bottom, and I had an aversion to religion and God because my abusers were in that realm. And so it distorted my connection with people. It distorted my view of life and God and the love. I really didn't know what love was. But one day I wasn't going to necessarily get in the Bible because I still, you know, I mean, my hell was associated with that whole thing. So I laid down and I started praying or meditating, and I started being shown exactly what all those things were. And we can talk more about it. But I did want to say that they never medicated me because I was a trauma, brain trauma. So they can't sedate you. And that's why they had somebody watching me. You know, that's the reason. They need to make sure you're coming back. But what has happened is the story has been explained to me in my meditation. The two people, the first two children that I saw were my abusers as children. I started to see why they were the way they were. I started to see why I had done, you know, I left a marriage after 18 years and my skeletons were trying to rise. I didn't know they were, but I was essentially out there running, trying to find this thing called happy. I looked good on the outside. I was a nurse. I was traveling, but I've been given the information. And so when that was being brought up in me during a meditation, and I saw them as children of the same source that I came from, and they forgot that they are a part of that. Just like I had no idea I was a part of that. I had no idea that divine love, some people call it God, some people call it, you know, Mother Earth, universe, universal consciousness, that is life itself, the love of life is within all of us. But we're conditioned and we're, you know, just like my abusers, my light started to go out. And as you know, we're told that we are sinful by just coming into this world, but we're not. And that whole sin thing, how can you escape that, right? Except for through this story of Jesus dying for our sins in the Bible. Now I've been in it. It's like, that is an instrument of gold. That is definitely basic instruction before leaving Earth, Bible, right? Like, it's in there. I can now look at it. But and see the stories differently in a different perspective that kind of apply now. The grace and the love that flowed through me was unconditional love, and I could not help but extend it to them. And so this weight of the, I didn't even know, had distorted my view of what life was about, was lifted. And it was like, holy hell, what is happening?
I love this. And let me try to explain a couple things here. A lot of people in their life review, they feel extreme empathy for someone else that they may have hurt in some way through their action.
You feel all of it. You feel what you have done to other people and how they felt. I didn't really go down that because it gets long. I mean, there was a lot of different little scenes in there. But the ones where I had done something that caused pain for another person, I felt that on that side. I felt like what that felt like. But I also was shown why I was like that. And the purity in me never left me. It just got covered up. And so this was like about remembering my light. And that light that we were talking about that was coming in that I thought was lava, that was the light of love. That was life spark itself trying to allow the wounds that were in the bowels of my soul to come up, to shine light on it so I could see it from a different perspective. But I was so messed up in my head in fear, I couldn't even see that. I was afraid of the light. I was afraid of life and God and the whole, and I didn't even recognize it. After, when I released, the first question that came to me to ask myself is, how can I see this differently? And what is it trying to teach me? And I had to be brave enough to look back at it. Because of course, when you look back at it, all those emotions come up. And again, before, I would have drank them away or pilled them away. Now I said, okay, I'm at the bottom of the barrel. I'm willing. Show me a different way to see this. I made it through hell the first time. I don't have to drink. I will do this. And it's actually been very gentle. It's not been a hell experience. I still see it. I still feel it. I feel the emotion. But then I understand where my, what, all those things I had put in front of myself that blocked myself from receiving love. It was a protection. It was a barrier. It was through the lens of my wounds. Now it's like the wounds have been lifted and I can see the grace in all people. They're just disconnected from their source. We've just forgotten that we are part of it. And so I've been given little tidbits on how people can move that negative energy, the dark energy that we feel, fear, pain, all those things, and then know what absolute elation feels like. Practice what that feels like in your body. And then you become mindful when it's happening in real life. And you go, that emotional uncomfortableness is actually a gift from God to say, we got some stuff down there that needs to be looked at. Like if you're cussing somebody out in traffic, that's not about the other person. That stuff's coming out of you. That uncomfortable feeling is like, you're looking at it wrong. This has not been taught. Like if we had been told that we were light of life itself, and we all knew our worthiness and our value, but we're in a society that we, you know, and this is another far-fetched thing, and I have nothing to validate it. But in one of my meditations, it was shown to me that God is all in all. It is the life source energy that is around us. It is that energy that is moving things forward. And every single event that happens in your life happens as an opportunity to remember that you are the light. And the light of love, if it sits in light of love by itself the whole time, it can't remember who it is itself. And so through our lives, through all of it, the bad and the good, the contrast is a gift if you can see it that way. Instead of going down the rabbit hole of what we've been taught, you know, hate that person, they're awful, you are a victim. No, like once you release that, it's like, then you remember, oh my gosh, I am an extension of life force energy. And I believe Jesus was trying to say the same thing. Now, I think that he was said, I'm the son of God. We all are sons of God. But if you say that to some people, they think you're being blasphemy, or I think that's what they call that. But the truth of the matter is he was connected to that source. Okay, sorry. I told you I'd get going because it's so exciting. I'm so sorry.
I don't know how to slow you down. So, Michelle, these experiences for the person that goes through them, there's always important lessons to learn and usually beautiful lessons that can be life-changing. Tell me if I'm wrong or explain better, but it seems like the main lesson for you or beautiful gift for you was to have empathy for your abusers so you could forgive them and let all that go. Am I right there? And has that helped you be a happier person because of it?
Yes, it started there, but ultimately it was having the same grace and love and compassion for myself. And that's when the door blew open.
Okay. No, that is awesome. You can leave it right there. Before we run out of time.
I know. I'm so sorry. This has been fun, but yeah.
Don't apologize. Before we run out of time, I want to talk a little bit about what you do as a hospice nurse. I promised you we would get back to terminal agitation. Tell me what that is, and then let's talk about a couple cool hospice experiences.
Okay. So there is something called terminal agitation, and then there's something called visioning. Sometimes people get those two things confused. In the visioning, there's things like the visionary reach, where people are truly engaged with an energy source that they see that we, in this physical form, cannot see. It's almost like they're in between two worlds. About 3 weeks ago, I had a gentleman that was in that state of moving through that visioning, and he was absolutely reaching towards God. He was having a conversation with God. And in this conversation, we were all standing around him, but there was something that happened to his like physical form. Like there was a rally. Rallies show up in different ways, but there was a rally, a light, something. And he was so engaged and speaking it out loud. And the feeling in the room was just intense. But a lot of times, because we don't talk about death and dying, we are afraid. And so we don't get to experience those things. But it's absolutely their connection to the non-physical, about where their soul is being called home. Terminal agitation is completely different. It truly is an agitation. And as I was sharing with you my experience, I looked probably like the craziest person in that bed, screaming at people to help me and trying to get out. And it can look like that. People pick at their clothes. You can tell they're physically uncomfortable. We have medication for that, and it does definitely calm them. But what I truly feel is happening now, since I've gone through my own experience, is those things, those false limiting beliefs that they bought into and they exhibited in their lifetime are being brought up from the belly of the soul so that the light can shine on them, so that it can be released. Because the only thing that goes back with you is love. There's nothing else that goes back with you. When you go back to that light of love, that's what you take back to it. And possibly the story and the experience, right? If people know this in advance, had I known that even if I was dying, that I might be going through something like that, in my awareness, I might have been able to recall it, because all of the history was awareness that was being called forward. And to let people know it won't last. It's honestly there to help them release any garbage that can't go with them. And they'll be able to see it for what it is and do like me, like, oh my gosh, the compassion. And I see why that happened. And I see how that made me a better person.
And a better nurse, right? It sounds like your NDE made you a much more compassionate hospice nurse.
Well, especially with that, because I didn't necessarily know what that was, terminal agitation. And it can be a little scary when you see it, because it's like, what is happening? This is supposed to be a sacred thing. It is still so sacred. It is still so sacred, even in that, because it's just an undoing of that doesn't serve them. Now that I see that, I've absolutely been able to help patients move through it. I've been able to tell them if they're open. Now, please know, I am very sensitive to people's beliefs and that sort of thing. And I wait for an invitation before I share anything. And I don't necessarily share about my experience, but I promise them that it's not going to last long. It's just like birthing. We don't remember all the squishy bumpies that we came in through that portal, but it can be a little bumpy on the back end. Just hang on. And I promise it will all turn into that golden liquid love.
How has being a hospice nurse helped your faith or your hope in an afterlife?
There's no doubt that there is more beyond this physical form. We are energetic spiritual beings having a human experience, and that light of love that initiated the spark that got our journey going from conception is still available to us. And we haven't been taught to connect to it. But once you do, life is, and I wasn't very good with connecting with people because of my history. I can't get out of people's connection now. I mean, when people are moving through that, just to be in that unfolding for them and help them move through it is such an honor. It is just such an honor. And I have no fear around it now. So I can guide from that heart space instead of my head space, if that makes sense.
All right. Could you give us an experience or two that you've had with patients that helped that faith promoting kind of thing or made you believe more in an afterlife?
Yes. First one that I'm going to share with you is a patient that I worked with in a long-term care facility. And he was an atheist, very much did not believe in anything else beyond what was happening. I had the opportunity to work with him and help him open his mind to a possibility of being able to create what comes next, his heaven, or, you know, that fear that he had of the unknown because he didn't believe in anything. I challenged him to say, "Let try to make it up. Like, if you could do anything, how would it be?" And so he shared that he would be in the forest, in the rivers, and he would be climbing a mountain. This is the divinity. You just can't make it up. The timing was such, for whatever reason, I felt called to go in early that morning. And I don't even know why. Probably to catch the night shift people, just so I could say as a manager, I saw you guys or whatever. But I went in early and he was actually starting his transition. And so I sat with him on the bed and I recalled everything that he had shared with me about what his journey to the non-physical was going to look like. As we were moving through this, he would whisper, like, there, you don't have a powerful voice at that time. You don't have that energy, but he would whisper and would confirm that what we were doing together was working. And so I was kind of like, as something came over me and I was rooting him. He didn't have family. So it was just me and him. And I was rooting him to climb that mountain and to hang on. The bumpy part wasn't going to last long. And he was almost there. And this glow and this smile that came over this guy as he's taking his last few breaths was, whew, blew me back. Like it was like being in heaven in that moment. And when I actually saw the energy on his last exhale, and it was one of the most beautiful deaths I have ever experienced. And I know that we are divinely connected to the source that created us. We've just forgotten. And if we can help people remember their own power. So this guy created his journey back to the non-physical, and it was beautiful. I would have thought he would have had a really hard one, but it was beautiful.
Did you just say you saw his energy?
I did. I've seen energy leave twice. So what it looks like is, as people are passing, their pupil of the eye will constrict down very tightly before their soul exits the body, with that final breath. When the final breath happens, the eyes dilate right open, and this man had the most beautiful blue eyes. So when the dilation happened, the blue hue on the outside was very prominent, and it's like a film or a gas fume that released from this area of him. It was, you know, you do this sort of thing. Like, you
yeah, did I really see that?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And so I did that sort of thing. Like, I thought, do I have a tear in my eye? Like, what is happening here? And it was very, it wasn't like a foreign body. It was just like an energy film. Like if you're pumping gas, how you can see behind the gas, but you see the distortion in front between you and the pump. It's just, it was the same thing in my experience of what I saw.
Sort of like a heat wave kind of thing.
Yeah. 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 Like a mirage on a road, but you can see through it. You can see on the other side of it.
Yeah, fascinating. Okay, what was the other one you were thinking of?
My best friend, Brett, he had cancer. He had been sent to a hospice house to die. He was in the hospital for 4 months. He had an internal bleed from his cancer, colon cancer. They couldn't find it. They pumped him up with blood, sent him to the hospice house. And he called me and he said, there's a miracle that has happened. My bleeding stopped when I was being transported from the hospital to the hospice house. Come get me. Come get me out of the hospice house. If I truly am dying, they gave him 3 days that the blood, you know, that I put in was going to be done. And I kept saying, that's not a bad way to go. You just kind of go to sleep. And he's telling me for sure he's had a miracle. And in my medical mind, I'm like, you haven't had a miracle. There's no way. This guy couldn't find it for as long as you were in there. He's adamant. And I was like, okay, I'm going to bring you home. I bring him home and he was with me for 16 more months. And in that 16 months, we had some just, you can't make the shit up. Like magical moments, right? You just can't make it up. And he really started to open my eyes to seeing things differently, to opening my eyes to God, to opening my eyes. And we lived it. He was on borrowed time. So we would get up in the morning, we would have our gripe session about everything that was wrong in the world and all the people around us. And then that was it. We had 1 hour, and then we were out living life every single day to the fullest. So he really helped me understand what that was about. He really helped me understand what unconditional love was about for the first time. And here I'm in my 50s, right? He was just truly a best friend. And it was such an honor to go through that with him. He was the other one where I saw the same sort of thing. That film, for lack of a better word, on the final exhale was visible. And when it left, the tender smile that was on his face, I wish I would have taken a picture, you know, because you can tell people, but until you are, it's such an experiential sort of thing. To be in that presence of that is truly grace. And so many people miss it because we're afraid of it, right? We're afraid to stand in that as it's happening, but it's really a very cool place.
All right. Speaking of fear, before I let you go, I have one last question. And that is, Michelle, on a scale of 1 to 10, what is your level of fear of death?
0, none whatsoever. I'm not one of those that I want to go home to go to this because I feel I've connected with it here. And so it's just going to be bonus when I leave my suit. I'm not afraid at all.
All right. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks again for listening and sharing this podcast. Don't forget to hit the follow or subscribe button and sign up for our newsletter at roundtripdeath.com. If you want to share your near-death experience, or if you have questions or comments about the show, send an email to eric@roundtripdeath.com. Until then, I wish you everything good that you're looking for in this life and the next.